Jean Balance. I'll be serving as one of the moderators for today's session just to help get things kicked off today. And in just a few moments, I'll be turning things over to Michelle Mahoney, who will serve as your primary moderator for today's session. Before we begin the technical portion for today's broadcast, I'm going to cover some basic instructions and reminder items for those of you that are just hopping on the line. Give everybody a couple more minutes to get ready for today's broadcast. Again, you should be here for our upcoming CLUIN seminar, which has been sponsored by the U.S. EPA's Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response. The Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation is proud to present a session on reuse planning at Superfund sites and how a little planning can go a long way. You'll be joined by a number of presenters today, and I'll go ahead and let Michelle introduce them from her location. But in the meantime, let's get started with some basic instructions. If you've just hopped on the line for the very first time, hopefully you're in the process of checking yourself in and joining us for the live interactive broadcast through Adobe Connect. Again, if this is your first CLUIN seminar, when you registered for today's live broadcast, you should have received an email and a reminder email as well with a complete set of instructions on how you could join us for today's session. That email would have pointed you to something called the seminar homepage. That seminar homepage would have a description for today's broadcast, contact information, bios and photos for our presenters and organizers, links to download the presentation materials in a few different formats, options to provide feedback, and most importantly, a button in the upper left corner that says Go to Seminar. If you click that button, you'll be asked to identify yourself and the number of people with you, and you can actually be brought directly to the online interactive environment where our presenters will be delivering their broadcast. I'm looking at the housekeeping slide, which is our second slide in the deck, just reminding everybody that using Adobe Connect will allow our presenters to move through the materials for you, so you can actually sit back and watch as they deliver the session in real time from their location. If you prefer to flip through the slides at your own pace, again, I'm going to refer you to download a copy of that from the seminar homepage and print them off and have them available off to the side. Again, we want you to try to join us for the interactive portion through Adobe Connect. There will be some very cool polling features, and I want to try to get as many people online in Adobe Connect to help make this an interactive session. By default, audio is available online for every single participant, so you can actually listen to the entire broadcast right through your computer or mobile device. If you're having any problems with the online audio, the first thing I'll ask you to do is to check your local volume or speaker settings. Sometimes you just need to go in and actually increase the speaker or sound output from your computer or device. If that doesn't work, sometimes a pair of headphones can help. If you continue to have problems with the online audio, we do have toll-free call-in information for anyone who needs it. Simply type a question or message into the question box in the lower right corner of the screen, and we'll be happy to provide that toll-free call information to anyone who needs it. If you do join us on the telephone lines, please note that all phone lines will be kept muted, and we would ask that you remain on that global mute to help cut down on other audio disruptions which could delay the presentations through the conference. At any time, you can use the Q&A or questions box in the lower right corner to submit your comments, questions, or report technical problems that you might be having. Again, you should see a series of windows open on the screen in front of you. The majority of your screen should be showing a window with the presentation. And then in the very bottom right corner, you should see a box that's topped with Enter Questions Here and already has a welcome message from me, Jean Ballant. That's the private question queue where you can type up your questions or comments at any time. If you want to test that feature out, by all means, feel free to do so or give us a real-time status update right now and just let us know how the audios and visuals sound from your location. Today's broadcast is going to be recorded and will be archived on the CLUIN website. You will automatically receive an email as soon as that recording is available, and you'll be welcome to forward that on to anyone that you think will find it a valuable expenditure of their time. If you're interested in learning more about our sessions, you can browse the well over 500 archived seminars that we currently have up on the CLUIN website. Again, just a reminder from the seminar homepage, not only can you learn more about the broadcast, but I'm going to draw your attention to that Go to Seminar button. Hopefully, if you're seeing this, you can already see the slides up there and you guys have gotten past this. But you can come back to the seminar homepage at any time to download the slides or learn more about our speakers or additional resources. For our Adobe Connect environment, again, the slides will be occupying the majority of your screen. If you want to make them bigger at any time, there's a full screen button that appears in the upper right corner of that particular window. You can press that on and off as needed to make the slides larger. If you want to turn off the full screen view, simply press the full screen button again. It'll shrink the slides back down. Along the right side of your screen, you're going to see a series of boxes. In the upper right corner, you'll see the CLUIN logo as well as photos of our presenters as we go through our talks today. Just below that, you'll see a collection of related URLs. You can click on any one of those, press the Browse To button, and open up those websites locally on your own computer. And then just below that is that all-important questions box. You can type up your comments, questions, or report technical problems at any time by typing them in here and pressing that little cartoon bubble or hitting Enter, and that will privately submit them to our question queue. And when we take designated breaks for Q&A, our moderators will read them out loud and actually get an answer from our presenters for you. I think that's the end of the reminders that I have for today's broadcast. So I'm going to go ahead and turn things over to our other moderator today, Michelle Mahoney. Michelle, whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you, Jean. As Jean mentioned, this is our Superfund redevelopment reuse planning webinar, and I thank everyone for joining us today. We have several presentations. First, we'll start off with an introduction by the Superfund redevelopment program manager, Melissa Friedland, to give us an introduction and some background, and then we'll hear from our project officer, Frank Avasado, and then we'll have a couple case studies from Elisa Hefner and Matt Roby. So with that, I don't want to delay the as they come in after each presentation. So please, I do encourage you to follow Jean's instructions and enter questions whenever you think of them in the question pod in the lower right-hand corner of your Adobe Connect room. So with that, I would like to turn the presentation over to Melissa Friedland.
Thanks, Michelle, and thank you all for joining us today. This is the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative's final webinar in our quarterly series for fiscal year 2013. And during our last webinar in June, we polled the audience to find out what topics folks were especially interested in, and reuse planning was a top request. So fortunately, this is an area where we have a lot of good information, and we're very excited to share several wonderful projects with you today. So next slide. As I mentioned, this is the last SRI webinar of the fiscal year, and I just wanted to take a brief moment to introduce SRI for those of you on the line who may be attending your first SRI webinar. SRI is an EPA program committed to restoring, revitalizing, and bringing economically productive new uses to Superfund sites. SRI does this largely through supporting communities' efforts to return Superfund sites to productive use. Reuse planning plays a critical role in considering site factors, community needs, and resource goals, as well as analyzing next steps. SRI's mission is to work with communities and other partners in considering future use opportunities and integrating appropriate reuse options into the cleanup process. We work at a national level, developing policies, tools, and performance measures that help support reuse activities, and also at a regional level, sharing lessons learned and supporting specific projects like our regional seeds that we'll cover later in the webinar. And before I go to the next slide, I just want to call your attention to the two pictures above. That on the left is a meeting at the Lower Darby Creek site in Pennsylvania in EPA's Region 3. And on the right is an award ceremony celebrating the town of Arlington, Tennessee's efforts working with EPA to reuse the Arlington blending and packaging site in EPA's Region 4. Next slide. In today's SRI webinar, Frank Avasado, who's the Superfund Redevelopment Project Officer at EPA headquarters, will introduce reuse planning and SRI's regional seed program. And then we'll cover some in-depth case studies demonstrating reuse planning in action. We'll learn more about several different planning projects and how these planning activities have benefited the sites. At the conclusion of our webinar today, I'll provide you with some ways to learn more about the topics we cover and perhaps even get a similar project started in your own community. We'll also have at the time of the webinar, we'll also have time at the webinar for questions, and time permitting, we'll take questions after each case study presentation. So Frank, I'll let you get us started talking about reuse planning.
Thank you, Melissa, and welcome everyone. I am Frank Avasado, the Project Officer for EPA's Superfund Redevelopment Initiative. As Melissa mentioned, SRI works to support communities' efforts to return Superfund sites to productive use. Next slide. SRI has found that site reuse, whether it is during, after, or throughout site cleanup, provides a variety of economic, environmental, and social benefits. Commercial reuse of sites can support jobs that provide income and revenue to a community. We have seen increased public revenue and property values at and around sites where reuse has taken place. Sites may also provide recreational opportunities and restore valuable wetlands and natural habitats that would otherwise be unavailable. Site reuse cultivates a vested interest in the property and aids in the site's long-term stewardship. It can lead to better protection of human health and the environment and to expedited cleanups. Not only can reuse provide direct benefits to a local community, but it also helps achieve EPA's goals. SRI's work is critical to supporting EPA's strategic plans, including the agency's 2010 reuse directive, which mandates that reuse be explored throughout the Superfund process. Reuse planning and site reuse can and should be considered both pre- and post-remedy. Planning for future years during the remedy selection process can ensure the remedy selected will support the desired future use. If cleanup is already complete at a Superfund site, reuse planning can ensure that the desired new use is consistent with remedy components in place and can assist in removing unnecessary barriers to reuse. Now, three of the photos on this slide highlight reuse. We have the economic slide, which refers to the manufacturing center at Benfield Industry Site in North Carolina, Region 4. The middle slide, the environmental, refers to the restored wetlands at the Atlas Tax Site in Massachusetts in Region 1. And the last one, the social photo, refers to the community playground at the Pemico Maywood site in California in Region 9. Slide 3, please. Through SRI, EPA helps stakeholders actively participate in the cleanup and reuse of sites. The way that EPA has done this has evolved over the course of SRI's program history. Initially, a pilot program was developed to provide local governments with services and funds for public outreach and reuse planning. In 1999, SRI provided 10 pilot grants to eligible local governments. Between 1999 and 2002, the grant program expanded to include 70 communities who received program assistance. Based on lessons learned during these pilot projects, the process to support reuse planning activities evolved into what we now call regional seeds. Regional seeds are resources that SRI provides to communities at the request of EPA regional offices. While they do not fund environmental assessments, cleanups, or actual site redevelopment, regional seeds do provide an initial investment to help communities and EPA regions to find the right tools to move reuse forward. SRI allocates resources to provide in-kind reuse planning services through the assistance of a national contractor with expertise in the reuse of contaminated sites. The two photos on this slide refer to, the one on the left is recreational reuse at Avtec's Fiber site in Front Royal, Virginia. This site was one of the initial SRI pilot projects in 1999, and the one on the right is a community working session for reuse planning funded through a regional seed at the Tickeyune wood treating site in Mississippi in Region 4. Next slide. SRI understands that each site and community is different. Because of this, there is no one-size-fits-all approach to Superfund reuse. However, regardless of the site type or cleanup status, regional seeds provide an important catalyst for communities to begin the reuse process. While regional seeds can support other reuse activities, the majority of regional seed funding directly supports site reuse planning. Many sites have reuse potential but remain vacant or idle because stakeholders lack understanding of the remedy components, the types of potential future uses, and the key steps and players needed to return a site to beneficial use. The seed concept kickstarts the process by bringing the right stakeholders to the table, clarifying the remedy and any constraints on reuse, and outlining the community's goals and suitable reuse options to pursue. As the reuse planning process moves forward, communities can leverage the initial seed investment with resources from the local government, stakeholders, the state, or EPA regions to continue the process. Slide 5, please. When regional seed funding is used as an initial investment for reuse planning activities, benefits are realized both by EPA and by communities impacted by Superfund sites. Reuse planning opens the door to allow the community, stakeholders, and EPA to work together. Now, reuse planning can improve communication between EPA and stakeholders by identifying common goals for cleanup and reuse and clarifying responsibilities. It can also establish relationships and productive partnerships between the site's key players, including EPA, the the state, local government, stakeholders, and the surrounding community. It can also clarify and address community concerns regarding the site's contamination, cleanup status, and reuse potential. It can also ensure the protectiveness of the site's remedy, determine the reasonably anticipated future land use, and align this with community needs and goals. This may also help to inform remedy selection or evaluate the remedy's compatibility with proposed future uses. It can also reduce costs through tailored remedy design, and it can also enhance the long-term stewardship by creating a vested interest in the site's maintenance. Now, pictured here is a photo of a meeting that was funded by SRI and it's the Community Coalition to plan for the future of the communities of North Birmingham. The coalition brought together communities, residents, and government agencies, including EPA, to address issues of environmental cleanup, enforcement, and community investment. Now let's take a closer look at the local level benefits of reuse planning for communities. Slide number 6, please. Reuse planning provides benefits for communities throughout the Superfund process, and community engagement is an integral part of each phase of the reuse planning process. Increased involvement on the part of the community allows for the public to voice concerns and questions about a site's history contamination and potential future uses, and for EPA to address these concerns. Effective reuse planning processes often prompt local communities to think more deeply about what is actually feasible given the contamination, achievable cleanup, surrounding land uses, and other factors, and about why and what they really need. Communities are able to identify local amenities that are lacking. For example, many communities have set aside ample space for commercial or industrial development, but not for parks and recreation areas. Some communities might lack retail space or industrial facilities. The planning process allows communities to realize their big picture needs and how the reuse of the site can fit into their vision. As I mentioned before, SRI has found that no two sites are alike and reuse must be considered on a site-specific basis. Now pictured here on slide 6 is the installation of a playground at the Wolfhook Chemical Site in Georgia in Region 4 and a view of a portion of the site that supports a local fairground down below. Slide 7. SRI approaches reuse planning with flexibility because there is no one-size-fits-all approach. Considering and implementing reuse is not done through a scripted process. A situation assessment, or reuse plan can be used to approach reuse of a site as a whole or just a portion of the site. These reuse planning services can also help communities evaluate whether a specific type of reuse may be suitable for the site. Situation assessments can be used to make initial observations on reuse potential of the site and explore whether future reuse planning would be valuable. A community may be interested in an alternative energy project at a site or in use of a green remediation techniques. A situation assessment can help evaluate the site's suitability for these types of projects. Reuse assessments can be used to determine a range of suitable potential future uses for the site to inform the cleanup process and the local planning efforts. The reuse assessment is a critical component of the cleanup process. Either a formal or informal reuse assessment should be done for every site. A formal reuse assessment can help a community think about what their needs are and what is possible at the site. A reuse plan outlines specific locations and uses for the site based upon additional stakeholder discussion and analysis. It may include developing several scenarios for consideration or outlining more detailed considerations for a single scenario for stakeholder review. A reuse plan can include a site in its entirety or a portion of its site. It can even be a part of a larger area-wide planning project that incorporates reuse of the site property into overall planning for the community and surrounding areas. Now, the list shown here is first on the left, part of a reuse plan for the Fairfax Street Wood Treater site in Jacksonville, Florida, in Region 4. And on the left, solar panels installed at the Apache Powder Company site in Arizona in Region 9. These are used to power part of the groundwater cleanup operations. SRI supported renewable energy pre-feasibility analysis that provided information on the site's potential for renewable energy development that could be compatible with the site's remedy and the ongoing manufacturing options. Next slide. Now I would like to turn to some in-depth case study examples of reuse planning. We will hear from Matt Roby and Elisa Hefner, who work with Skeel Solutions, a national contractor that supports EPA's community engagement and reuse planning activities. Matt and Elisa will share how reuse planning has transformed contaminated sites and provided benefits to both communities and EPA. These case studies provided excellent examples of planning services that work best at different types of sites and with different community scenarios. We'll hear about Waste Inc. site in Michigan City, Indiana, followed by the Bandera Road groundwater plume site in San Antonio, Texas, the Buckbee Mears Company site in Cortland, New York, and the East Helena site near East Helena, Montana. These projects cover a range of site types, histories, contamination issues, and community needs. I hope that through these examples, you will be able to think about what is possible through the reuse planning process at a site that may be in your community. With that, I will hand things over to Matt to share the Waste Inc. case study with you. Thank you.
Frank, this is Melissa. I just want to break in here before we go on to Matt and Elisa. We have a question about reuse planning. Someone has asked, are the regional seed projects subject to EPA cost recovery from PRPs? So can you answer that, or we can all take a crack at it?
We have had a couple instances where there have been some cost recovery cases. We haven't had a whole lot of them, though.
Right, and I would just add that in the scheme of things, reuse planning is a very, very, very small amount of the entire remedy. So a lot of times people sort of put it in the package of what they initially asked for, but it sort of gets kicked out, I guess would be a way to say it. Okay, so with that, thanks. We can go on to Elisa.
Just encourage everyone as we're going through the presentation to continue to submit your questions using that enter questions here pod. With that,
Great. Thank you, Michelle and Melissa and Frank. And also just while we're waiting for the slide deck to come up, just thank everyone for participating in today's webinar. Again, my name is Elisa Hefner. I'm senior designer at Skeel Solutions. And I'll start off our case study presentations today by looking at Bandera Road. We're waiting for that to the slide to advance. There we go. The Bandera Road groundwater plume Superfund site is located in the city of Leon Valley, which is in the northwest section of the city of Antonio, Texas. Bandera Road, which is pictured on the slide there to the right, is a central corridor for the city and also a major travel route between downtown San Antonio and surrounding centers. The groundwater plume is centered in the primary business area along Bandera Road, and there's also some residential homes also located nearby. This plume was identified through assessment activities conducted by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality Voluntary Cleanup Program. The investigation identified the presence of tetrachloroethylene PCE and trichloroethylene PCE in concentrations above the maximum contaminant level, within the Edwards Aquifer. This is the sole source drinking water for Central Texas. Just additional background information, EPA's Record of Decision, which will describe the remedy selected for cleaning up the contaminated vapor, soil, and groundwater, is anticipated to be completed this month. This case study looks at reuse planning at a site early on in the Superfund cleanup process. Just as initial remedial investigation and feasibility study was conducted. So to get started, the City of Leon Valley was interested in promoting sustainability as a platform for economic development and prioritized this commercial core along Bandera Road as the desired location for sustainable reinvestment and redevelopment for their city. The city was also concerned that the stigma related to groundwater plume and this lengthy cleanup would deter community development within this area. So through EPA's SRI Regional Seed funded a reuse planning process to help the community identify revitalization strategies to mitigate the potential stigma associated with a long-term cleanup. The map here on the right, you all can see my cursor, which is over here, excuse me. I see it off the side of my screen. Thank you. This is, if you'll follow the arrow, this is the Bandera Road, that commercial corridor. These two black dots here and here show the source areas for the groundwater plume. And this area here in the center is that primary town center where where the city had prioritized for revitalization. Great, so through the reuse planning process, EPA and the city and local stakeholders participated in several community meetings, and the result was a revitalization framework for the city of Leon Valley based on local sustainability goals, local assets, and a redevelopment plan for that town center, their commercial core there. This framework included a green infrastructure plan that outlined a menu of sustainable revitalization strategies, including a concept plan for a greenway, green streets, and connection to a regional trail network. For those who may be new to the term green infrastructure, here we're talking about green infrastructure as a framework for understanding the valuable services that nature provides for the human environment and integrating these natural assets into the city and regional planning. The community's goals and strategies identified during the reuse planning process was summarized in a final reuse plan that Frank described earlier. This was completed in June of 2010 and is available in the resources section if you would like to check that out for more information. The reuse assessment also and plan also helps to articulate the local benefits of green infrastructure and how investing in green infrastructure can yield tangible economic benefits. For example, green infrastructure strategies can reduce energy costs by countering this area's soaring summer temperatures. They've had some higher temperatures recently, and alleviate pressure on stormwater management systems by reducing the velocity and amount of runoff. Also, shoppers tend to stay longer and spend more in commercial areas with green infrastructure. On the next couple of slides, I will walk through the green infrastructure strategies in more detail, but these strategies leverage existing natural assets in this community, including several creeks, existing and future open space, and existing and proposed trails. And the images on this slide just provide examples of green infrastructure strategies from other communities. That top image looks at natural drainage approaches for stormwater using these planted areas along streets to capture stormwater, slow it down, and help clean it before it goes into the storm system. And then the bottom slide looks at vegetation planting strategies to help improve water quality along local waterways. And also start to provide sort of beautiful outdoor areas that can improve residents' quality of life and access to outdoors, which were also the city's goals as well. So the first strategy is the Creek Greenway strategy. And this looks at using existing and planned open space to create a greenway along Hubner Creek, which is in this area. And I'm sorry, every time I go to grab my little arrow, I can't seem to grab it. Thank you. This is Hubner Creek going through the center of town. By ensuring a safe Bandera Road crossing for pedestrians and cyclists, the city will create multimodal access to commercial centers and recreational amenities for city residents. The second strategy looks at a green streets network for tree planting and natural drainage features to help improve walkability, aesthetics, and stormwater management. Some of the action steps identified included negotiating with the local Department of Transportation to integrate bike lanes, natural drainage, and tree planting. Also looked at targeting tree planting to designated streets that connect neighborhoods to greenways, and seeking funding for trails and sidewalks. Other actions included integrating natural drainage, ideal for stormwater management, especially along streets that intersect with Bandera Road, connect to that Hoosner Creek Greenway, and provide connectivity to existing amenities. The third strategy focuses on creating a regional link between the North Leon Creek Greenway The North Leon Creek Greenway here, the town center, which is located here, and the proposed Hoosner Creek Greenway. Integration of commercial centers and recreational amenities could help create a really unique sense of place within Leon Valley and attract regional recreational users and shoppers. So you can see in these three different strategies, the city's proposed future use for this area, all were located around this groundwater plume area as well. So in looking at reuse planning, it has led to implementation here in the near term. City staff have used the reuse assessment to coordinate revitalization efforts and apply for implementation funding, including funding to implement greenway signage, again, sort of an early sort of low-hanging fruit opportunity that can also help as the cleanup process for the groundwater plume begins, and it will be a long process, may help with the stigma that may be associated with the cleanup. The city has also secured a mixed-use development agreement for an abandoned automobile dealership. This is a 13-acre site, which was valued at nearly $9 million, with buildings measuring a total of 92,000 square feet. This is important to the city because sales tax revenue in the city has been on the decline since 2002. EPA's remedial action was prioritized for funding, in part due to having this future use plan in place that demonstrated economic activity that could otherwise stall if cleanup activities did not move forward. So as a result of SRI's reuse planning at the Bandera site, the Green Infrastructure Plan has helped the city to obtain funding to implement their sustainability goals. The map on the right here provides a closer look at how the Green Infrastructure Revitalization strategies could inform the revitalization of that town center, which also sits on top of that groundwater plume. And the plan has also supported the city in maintaining positive, proactive economic development momentum during the long-term groundwater cleanup. City representatives have also applauded the plan for integrating existing sustainability, transportation, stormwater management, and economic development efforts into a unified vision for moving forward. I guess at this point, this concludes the primary case study presentation for Bandera Road. So happy to turn it back over to Michelle for questions. If there's time.
Yes, we have definitely have some time for questions, and we've had some questions submitted via the online questionnaire. So with that, Melissa, would you like to read
sure.
the question that came in?
Sure. Elisa, the first question is stormwater management critical in addressing the contamination at the site?
Elisa, this is Matt Roby. I can chime in on that as well.
Great. Okay, thanks.
Sure, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I think that there were two questions from the audience about stormwater management, I believe, and stormwater management was not a major component of the groundwater remedy, but in this case was more of an option to offset some of the obstacles associated with redevelopment that were presented by the long-term groundwater cleanup. And so it was more of a strategy to address revitalization in the area, but not specifically related to the remedy, nor did it necessarily have impacts on the remedy itself.
Okay, great. And we've got one more question, which is how will future use continue to be considered during the Superfund site cleanup at Bandera?
Thanks. This is Elisa. I'm happy to jump in on that one. In the short term, the record of decision is anticipated to be completed this month, and the ROD, the record of decision, will describe the remedy selected for the cleanup. And this remedy is based on a range of factors, including reasonably anticipated future land uses. So the Bandera Road Record of Decision can take into account the future land uses identified during this reuse planning process. Also, the City of Leon Valley and EPA could collaborate with the source area site owners on aligning site-specific redevelopment or revitalization plans with the remedial design as more information becomes available. And I think also throughout the cleanup process, EPA can provide information on the cleanup as well as Superfund liability throughout the process, especially for any property owners who may be interested in expanding or selling their properties. I think it's also important to note that you know, the Superfund cleanup process can take years, especially when you're dealing with groundwater. And this, the reuse planning process in general is designed to create this flexible framework that can adapt to new information about the site or if new local conditions arise. And so I think that's another way that the reuse planning efforts and the resulting plan can be considered during the Superfund site cleanup by providing the community's goals or articulating those early on, what some of the opportunities and constraints are in a way that can be adapted over time as needed.
Okay, thanks. And we have one more question and then we'll move on to our other sites. Someone has asked, is SRI assistance limited to NPL listed sites, or can it be requested for other sites such as those in the Brownfields program? So we, SRI works with Superfund sites. You don't necessarily have to be on the NPL, but Brownfields has their own sort of pot of money and other regs and resources, so we concentrate on Superfund.
Thank you, Melissa. This is Matt Roby with SCIO Solutions. I'm a senior planner, and I'm going to present a case study on the Buckby Mears Co. site in Cortland, New York. The Waste Inc. landfill site in Michigan City, Indiana. I'm sorry, I got my order mixed up. And I know that people have been chiming in with questions all along here, so I'm going to actually prompt a response from the audience. How many people in the audience are interested in recreational reuse at landfill sites? And while you're formulating responses, I'll give the context and intro to the site. The Waste Inc. landfill is located in Michigan City, Indiana. That's in northeastern Indiana, about an hour and a half, 2 hours from Chicago. It's a 32-acre former privately owned landfill that was operated from the 60s until the mid-80s, and today is owned by the City of Michigan City. It's a site that was listed on the NPL site in 1985. The primary contaminants of concern are similar to those found at a lot of landfills that accepted commingled waste, volatile organic compounds, semi-volatile organic compounds, inorganics, PCBs, arsenic, manganese, and other metals as well. The site being owned by the City of Michigan City is it's located along an area of the city that along the Trail Creek surface water body, and that's been identified by the City of Michigan City as kind of a strategic opportunity for a greenway plan. And in 2010, the city developed a master plan for that greenway corridor called the Trail Creek Master Plan. And the goal of that plan was to create a cohesive public recreational amenity within the Trail Creek corridor, one that would serve as a local asset and a regional destination. And that plan identified the Waste Inc. site as kind of a central destination within the corridor, a destination that could serve as a multi-use park and kind of a major entryway to the greenway. And that is where the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative comes in. As part of that master planning process, the city and its consultant team developed a preliminary reuse concept plan for the Waste Inc. landfill itself, that looked at a pretty ambitious plan for the use of this park, one that would feature a dog park and walking trails connecting the site across to the Trail Creek water body, which, if I can grab my cursor, this is Trail Creek, and so there was a vision for trails to access the creek for a children's play area, for an adventure park with a zip line, a winter sports park, and a sledding hill, as well as access to a number of off-site areas that offered additional sort of conservation uses that would complement a park in the corridor. In 2011, the city approached EPA Region 5 looking for assistance in evaluating the feasibility of developing a recreational plan or a park like this site. And Region 5 provided assistance to Michigan City to do just that, to evaluate the compatibility between the remedy at the site and the proposed recreational use. This is an example of reuse planning at sites in the post-construction phase, sites where remedies are already in place and use restrictions are in place, and it's pretty clear what the opportunities and challenges might be, but might require further detailed understanding of how a proposed plan and the existing remedy features could work together. And so the reuse planning approach at Waste Inc. Landfill took into account three factors. One, looking at physical features at the landfill. Two, the existing remedial features. And three, the proposed recreational activities, amenities, and uses. And some of the pictures here illustrate the sort of range of uses proposed, as well as some of the remedy components in place on the site. So as I mentioned earlier, it's a 32-acre property. It's all publicly owned. And this, given this relatively large tract of publicly owned land, the city really saw this as a tremendous opportunity to establish access to the creek, as well as a rail trail and a way to get to some of the higher value conservation lands located nearby. The physical, in terms of the suitability analysis and that evaluation, this slide shows two components of that analysis, one, the physical features, and two, the remedy components. So the site analysis looked at topography and grades on the landfill, identifying three categories of slope. Those are slopes 0, less than 10%, slopes 10 to 20%, and slopes greater than 20%. And that provided kind of a critical factor for evaluating recreational programming options at the landfill. Additional analysis documented existing remedial features or remedy components at the site. And these at the Waste Inc. Landfill site include an 18-inch landfill cap, drainage features, the location of monitoring wells, landfill gas vents. This is an active landfill gas venting system site. So there are subsurface collection lines and a blower building and a leachate collection trench. These are all components found at a lot of landfill sites, so these should seem relatively familiar to many of you. The future use of the site, given that this remedy is in place, needs to accommodate access to as well as the continued operation of these remedial systems. So based on those factors, physical features, and the remedy components, the reuse suitability analysis resulted in this reuse suitability zones map that really serves as a valuable tool for evaluating a range of programming options at a landfill site. It breaks down areas within the landfill cap and outside the landfill cap, and there's basically flat areas within the cap, steep areas within the cap, areas outside the cap that could be suitable for development, and areas outside the cap that are sort of in the flood zone or in riparian areas along the creek. And so these four zones provide the basis for evaluation of potential impact on the remedy or a range of other programming options. For the next step in this suitability analysis, the consultant who developed a detailed analysis of the proposed concept plan. And so this map shows reuse zones associated with recreational use. So there's portions of the landfill where native plantings are proposed. There's portions of the landfill where mowed mode grass and trails are proposed, and there's areas where different types of structural development are proposed, an alpine slide, a skating rink, and a roller rink. There's a proposed zip line that has towers, and there are lookout platforms, all of those potentially located within the capped area. Weighted how these potential amenities might affect the remedy in place. For example, the proposed zip line requires support towers so that it would be anchored into the cap. So in working with EPA and the city to evaluate this option, that was kind of flagged as one item for additional due diligence by the city, that for the city to demonstrate that these anchoring systems could be installed into the landfill cap in a way that they wouldn't necessarily interfere with the protectiveness of the remedy. Another example, the ice rink and roller rink was initially proposed for an area where the slopes were fairly steep, and alternatives were generated that looked at flatter areas where there would be minimal impact on the cap. And so those are just a couple of examples of how the analysis of the reuse, the proposed uses, and the remedy in place using the sort of overlay of the reuse zones and proposed use was accomplished. As kind of in summary, this is an example of a reuse assessment that offers a model for evaluating compatibility between the proposed use and a site's remedy. This approach can be a useful tool to ground test the feasibility concept. And in this case, the outcome of the suitability analysis provided EPA with a tool to specifically identify elements of the plan that might impact the landfill cap and remedy components. And the assessment also helped Michigan City to refine its plan and take the next steps towards developing construction documentation and inform the rollout of its reuse plan. Today, Michigan City is in the process of rolling out this reuse plan in phases over the next few years. They'll begin with allowing public access to a perimeter road and a trail to access Trail Creek. And then future phases would include opening a dog park, a sledding hill, and then other recreational uses like the zip line, skating rink, and additional amenities. That is the end of my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or comments.
Okay, Matt, we've got one for you, and it's how much of the land area is the landfill itself versus the landfill buffer and ancillary areas, and also are there subsidence issues associated with this reuse?
The first question, how much of the landfill is the landfill itself versus buffer and ancillary areas? The landfill itself is closer to, is 32 acres. The city-owned property that spans the landfill and the riparian areas is closer to 60 acres. And in terms of the subsidence issues associated with this reuse, this had come up a number of times, and with respect to understanding whether or not the cap could support slabs for the zip line towers, for example, one of the considerations is it's a relatively old site, and so most of the settlement had occurred earlier on in the life of the landfill. But in order to actually build any structures on the surface of the site, sort of additional stability tests and would need to be demonstrated before anything was built on the surface.
Okay, great. And we have another question. What are the biggest challenges related to recreational use at landfill sites?
So there are many landfills in the Superfund universe of sites that come to be owned by municipalities. And so recreational reuse at large, flat, open areas is often an attractive reuse option. And so generally the potential barriers associated with landfill use can be site stigma associated with contamination. And another factor or that is communicating to the public that a site is safe for public use or safe for recreational use can be a big challenge. And I'm sure there are many of you in the audience that have experience with this. Another factor that can be a challenge in implementing recreational use would be, even though the property may be owned by a municipality, landfill sites often have accepted waste from a wide variety of haulers or may have been operated by private industry in the past. And so typically at sites that where there are responsible parties involved, there can be a lot of negotiations around the public's goals for the future use of the site and what can be agreed upon or negotiated in terms of what responsible parties are willing to support.
Okay, great. And we have another question, which is there more information, there's always more information, on how structures were built on the cap, like key considerations, things like that?
In this case, I think we could probably refer you to Michigan City down the road when construction documentation is available for this particular site. But there are resources available that look at specifically recreational reuse at landfill sites and strategies for working with cap depth. And we can likely find those and make them available.
Okay, great. And then we have a question that I think is for me and for Frank, which is, does SRI have the ability to assist post-ROD? And the answer is yes. So I think if there are no more questions, we have another question?
Just got another one come in.
Okay, let's see. How did the landfill affect Trail Creek leachability? Is the creek itself available for access?
The creek is available for access, and that was a good question throughout, and that probably gets at the heart of the sort of stigma issue. There are a lot of sort of recreational groups that are interested in using Rail Creek for fishing and boating. Early on in the remedial process, there was a fishing advisory signs posted along Trail Creek, and the city's engineering department has been monitoring leachate levels, and the EPA and the PRP group were in the process of determining whether or not those advisories could be lifted. But basically, there's a leachate collection system that's preventing the landfill leachate from reaching the creek. At one time, there was an ecological risk there, and today that ecological risk was mitigated by the remedy.
Great. Next one. Lisa? Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Great. This is Alisa again, and just waiting for the slide deck to load here. We're going to move west here to East Helena, Montana, and look at the East Helena smelter site. So to get us started, just to provide a little bit of context for this particular site, from the late 1800s until 2001, the Asarco smelter functioned as the engine of the local economy here in East Helena and became a vital part of the community's history as well as its heritage. However, smelter operations also led to the contamination of significant portions of East Helena and surrounding Lewis and Clark County. In 2009, the city annexed Asarco's former lands to allow for future growth and development. This was a significant amount of land annexed and brought into the community. And as EPA and the Montana Environmental Custodial Trust were pursuing cleanup activities, the local community really needed to develop a future use vision for those annexed lands that could guide cleanup as well as local planning and development efforts. Just a little bit of background, the Montana Environmental Custodial Trust, or Trust, I'll be referring to them as the Trust moving forward, was an organization formed to manage the cleanup of the former Asarco-owned properties in East Helena. Just moving to the next slide here. So part of the cleanup at the East Helena site called for remediation at active residential and commercial properties to address lead and arsenic contaminated soils. which you can see here in the map, a majority of the treated soils here shown in orange. However, remediation of undeveloped land and open spaces areas were deferred until there was either a change in land use or a proposal for a specific development. The reuse planning at East Helena focused on identifying potential future uses for a range of those undeveloped lands that were recently annexed by the city. Here we're just only showing a portion of those, but that includes these large areas up here as well as south of East Helena downtown as well. And so these recently annexed lands by the city, the majority of this undeveloped land was owned by the trust, and there was a need to identify suitable uses and a community vision for revitalization to help guide soil cleanup and implementation of institutional controls. For any of those of sort of new to the term institutional controls, those are basically legal or administrative tools such as zoning regulations, property use restrictions, permitting requirements that are used to help maintain the protectiveness of a site's remedy. So developing a comprehensive approach to reusing open space and undeveloped property in East Helena really required a collaboration among a range of stakeholders, including public sector planning agencies, that would include both the city and the county, public health officials, also property owners, EPA, obviously, and then also the trust. And so those are listed in more detail here, as well as just showing some pictures of the different types of stakeholder collaboration that happened throughout the process. So we talk about the process in more detail. In 2011, SRI supported EPA Region 8 in designing and facilitating a community charrette. A charrette is an intensive collaborative event or a set of meetings designed to generate ideas, refine goals and objectives, and explore design and planning considerations for a community or site or multiple sites. The East Helena charrette provided the basis for developing a revitalization framework and a vision for redevelopment in East Helena that could guide the EPA and trust-led cleanup, as well as also guide local land use planning. The charrette engaged over 45 local stakeholders and resulted in the community-wide revitalization strategy, which focused on three priority areas, the first being land use and development, the second being cultural heritage. As I mentioned, the history of the smelter in this community was also part of its sort of industrial cultural legacy, which was important to the community, and then finally habitat and recreation. So in addition to the charrette that was held during the day with 45 local stakeholders, the information that was generated during the charrette was also shared at an evening public meeting. And the bottom right picture there is actually East Helena's mayor, and that's him participating in the charrette. In addition to SRI, EPA's Technology Innovation and Field Services Division provided technical assistance in evaluating cleanup options. And this included on-site consultation, looking at different approaches using like soil amendments to address the contamination in the soil, as well as participation in the charrette. This really provided a great opportunity to integrate technical expertise into remedy and reuse considerations during the charrette. And the outcome of the charrette and the reuse planning process was an area-wide revitalization strategy that focused on three themes, the first being green infrastructure, which we've already talked about with Bandera Road example, so kind of a reoccurring theme there, as well as heritage tourism, drawing people to the area to learn and celebrate and experience the heritage of this area, as well as economic development. For each theme, the strategy identifies revitalization principles, also conceptual redevelopment options, and near-term actions to advance revitalization. I'm going to walk through these in a little bit more detail here on the following slides. So the basis for the area-wide revitalization strategy for East Helena is a land use framework for undeveloped properties. That's what you see here on the slide here in the middle. Those areas colored in different colors there relate to those different strategies for undeveloped properties. The framework also emphasizes several guiding principles that were developed by community stakeholders during the charrette, which were really these common themes that came up during the discussions. And they were jobs, livability, transportation, trails, creeks, connectivity, and heritage. And revitalization priorities target opportunities for expanding light manufacturing, commercial mixed use, cultural heritage preservation, and green infrastructure at strategic locations throughout the community. This approach is helping to also guide detailed land use planning, as well as cleanup efforts, and natural resource restoration approaches within the community. Here we're just going to look at some of those strategies. So cultural heritage and economic development priorities emphasize the development of a heritage park, which is identified here on the map, close to the East Helena downtown, and a mixed-use center at portions of Eastfields, which is the area here shown. This is the Eastfields area. Elements of the strategy help to guide the Trust's detailed redevelopment planning and market study. So since the completion of the revitalization framework in 2011, the Trust has retained CTA associates to conduct a market analysis, as well as develop a conceptual land use plan and redevelopment alternatives for those formerly Arsaco-owned properties. And that's what's pictured here on this slide. One alternative for the area bordering the smelter and Eastfields is shown on this illustrative concept. And it builds upon the reuse planning process recommendations and goals for the Heritage Park Commerce Center. It's by providing a mixed-use development with adjacent light industrial space uses. These concepts were presented to the community in 2012, and based on input and further refinement, the Trust actually plans to market its properties for redevelopment and the use to revenue, and this will also generate revenue to support further cleanup. Near-term green infrastructure opportunities outlined in the framework include strategic plan to, one, enhance trails along Prickly Pear Creek, which is a major creek corridor running through the community, as well as linking the creek corridor to regional trail networks that would connect the communities of East Helena, Helena, and Montana City. So the image on the left shows those sort of detailed strategies along Prickly Pear Creek, and then the image on the right shows linking East Helena here to those surrounding recreational assets in the region. And so as part of the cleanup, the Trust, EPA, along with trustees for a natural resources damages settlement, are planning the restoration for Prickly Pear Creek. And this restoration effort will implement elements of the revitalization framework's green infrastructure strategy. This includes the creation of a green infrastructure corridor to serve as the backbone of a recreation and heritage strategy that integrates the restored creek, a recreational trail, heritage exhibits, as well as a heritage commerce district. Also, the Trust recently released an animated video, which is available at that link there on the slide, to help community partners visualize the planned creek restoration process. And construction of a temporary bypass channel began in July 2013, and stream restoration is slated actually to be completed by 2016. This larger scale restoration effort demonstrates significant progress toward implementing aspects of the community-wide revitalization strategy. So here on the just the final slide of this presentation, just wanted to recap some of the benefits that SRI's regional seed provided in East Helena. From the community, again, a range of benefits. One, created this common vision for the community and a community-wide strategy based on goals and priorities that were important to the community, as well as identified near-term actions to guide planning and implementation. For EPA, this process identified a range of potential future land uses to guide soil cleanup and also increase community understanding of remedial approach. And I think I have a few extra minutes. I don't think I used my whole time, so maybe in just the last few minutes I hear before questions, maybe I'll ask Matt Roby, who also worked on East Helena, if there were anything he would like to highlight before turning it over to questions. If not, I'm happy to turn it back over to Michelle and Melissa.
Okay, thanks, Elisa. Actually, we do have a question, and that is that given that the trust owns the majority of land and is responsible for the sale or redevelopment of property, what specific value did SRI and EPA assistance offer the site and the community?
Great. I think this is probably a good question that Matt and I can tag team on. I think first, some of the values that provided both to EPA and the trust was a better understanding of how these various properties could be reused, as cleanup would be deferred until land use changed or property was redeveloped. Having the strategy to better understand those future uses, I think, to help the trust as well as EPA be able to better understand and prioritize cleanup activities. Matt, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
No, I think that the only other thing to add is one of the big challenges with the large amount of land under consideration in the areas where remedies were deferred, East Helena, as a municipal planning jurisdiction, was responsible for implementing zoning and institutional controls that would ensure that the remedy would remain protective. And given that there's a large amount of land where the remediation is to be completed in the future, those institutional controls and that whole system of institutional controls is fairly complex. And so providing an early idea of general future use categories for a large amount of area was valuable towards helping to set up the community for.
I think we can move on now to Buckby Mears, which is our last case study.
Okay, again, this is Matt Roby with SCIO. The Buckby Mears Coast site is slightly different than the other examples that we've shared. This is a site that's not actually an NPL site. It's a removal site and shows a different kind of approach towards looking at reuse planning. The Buckby Mears site is a former electronics manufacturing plant. It's about 75 acres and located in the city of Cortland, New York. Until 2004, International Electronic Devices and a prior owner, the Buckby Mears Co. company, operated a plant that made components for cathode ray tubes. And supplied those to IBM in Binghamton, New York. And in 2004, the International Electronic Devices abandoned the property really out of the blue, literally one day just closed the doors and walked away, leaving about 400,000 square feet of manufacturing space, as well as large quantities of hazardous chemicals. The abandonment of the facility resulted in significant job loss and tax revenues, and also over time, significant degradation of the property and the structures. As a result of the abandonment, EPA stepped in and performed an emergency removal action to address contamination. The real primary contaminant of concern was chromium, although at the time when the facility was abandoned, The city of Cortland's fire department had been aware that there were large quantities of, I think, sodium phosphate on site, and there were some big concerns that access to those to that material would be of value to for drug manufacturing, and that was a big concern. That so the removal action was conducted quickly and cost EPA about $8 million. In addition to that, the city had about $25,000 in back taxes owed, and the International Bank of India had an outstanding mortgage for somewhere in the range of $10 to $12 million. So all said and done, there's about $25 million owed on the property, and EPA and the city of Cortland and the bank got together to form kind of an interagency agreement to go through an administrative settlement to resolve these unrecovered costs. And as part of that effort, the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative was able to provide support to help this interagency effort by clarifying reuse options for the site, helping to resolve some of the outstanding liens, and help to reposition the property for reuse. So the property itself is, the facility itself is 50 acres. International Electronic Devices owned 75 acres, including some vacant land next to the facility. I cannot find my cursor here, but there it is. So here's the International Electronic Devices properties in orange, and the facility itself is located here. This is a relatively large chunk of land in a well-served industrial area of Cortland, and really represents kind of a key development opportunity for the city. And so the reuse assessment funded by SRI engaged the local planning department in the city of Cortland, as well as regional economic development representatives, EPA, and the State Bank of India to try to get a better handle on how to put property better for redevelopment. And so the reuse assessment evaluated site conditions and redevelopment assets. It identified key opportunities for redevelopment, clarified suitability for reuse, and developed some targeted strategies to prepare materials to support the sale of property at an auction. So just to get a better sense of the site itself, there were at one time five or six different buildings on the site. One of those buildings is a very large manufacturing building. It's over 200,000 square feet. There's 50 acres of property zoned for industrial use. The site is located in a proposed area, an area proposed for the New York State Brownfield Opportunity Area Program. The Cortland County was in the process of securing foreign trade zone designation. All of these were sort of valuable incentives that could potentially support redevelopment there. And in addition to that, property is located, has good access to Interstate 81, as well as the New York Susquehanna and Western Railway, which runs right along the edge of the site. And so in addition to this large manufacturing building, there's also a 30,000 square foot warehouse building, an on-site electric substation, and a wastewater treatment plant. And so part of the assessment was to understand how functional these assets were and how they could be leveraged to support redevelopment and sale the property at auction. And so to help stakeholders better understand what a developer would potentially have to work with at the site, EPA and consultant team developed a suitability analysis for the site that looked at the removal actions that were conducted and the conditions that were documented at the site as a way to better understand the condition of the property. And so some of the factors were, during the removal action, two of the buildings were demolished. Building 1 and Building 2 were demolished. Building 5 and Building 4 remained on site, although when they were abandoned, the owner no longer maintained them, and there were subsequent roof leaks and significant mold damage. There are some residual contamination in the concrete slabs and below the building foundations, and so documenting that information was critical to help prospective purchasers make informed decisions about the property. This suitability analysis identified kind of the key zones and considerations that a prospective purchaser would need to know, and based on that information, we identified a series of potential barriers to reuse, and really the current barrier that stands is the ownership, and that's to be addressed through this administrative settlement and sale at bankruptcy auction. One of the other interesting considerations that came out of the analysis was identifying options for adaptive reuse of this very large manufacturing structure in a building of the size of 200,000 square feet with significant mold contamination presented some challenges. And when EPA was doing its removal, there were some early estimates of the cost just to remediate the mold, and that was somewhere in the range of $2 million. When local redevelopment folks and some potential developers did a walkthrough at the property, people started to recognize that single 200,000 square foot manufacturing space was less valuable than a series of smaller spaces. And so there was a recognition that space could be, that the mold could be remediated in a more cost-effective way during the reconfiguration of the building's interior and leave a facility, you know, that might have smaller usable spaces in the 20 to 60,000 square foot range that would be more easily absorbed by the industrial real estate market in that part of New York State. Some of the other important considerations were identifying potential liability protections available to a prospective purchaser. And so those were some of the sort of key steps taken in identifying barriers and addressing them. And beyond the addressing the barriers, this reuse assessment also generated kind of a summary reuse zones analysis that identifies near-term reuse of an existing warehouse, the potential for adaptive reuse of this 200,000 square foot building, the potential for additional 12 acres of industrial development, and then a series of guidelines for managing prospective purchaser liability. And then finally, the table that I showed on the previous slide outlines a series of actions that would be needed to prepare the site for reuse. So those were kind of the key steps that came out of this analysis and this reuse assessment. And as a result of going through this process and engaging the local planning department, local economic development officials prior to the administrative settlement or in the planning phases of the administrative settlement, the city and EPA were able to identify a developer of another successful adaptive reuse project. This was a project at a former Smith Corona typewriter plant outside of Cortland. That developer toured the facility and was really interested in developing a kind of similar adaptive reuse approach. Today, EPA is working to coordinate a prospective purchaser inquiry call with that individual, and just to ensure that the parties are aware of bona fide prospective purchaser provisions. And at this point, EPA is anticipating a foreclosure auction in October 2013. And with a prospective purchaser at the table, I think folks are feeling optimistic that there's a way forward at this facility. I think just in closing, this is an example of a reuse assessment that focuses specifically on how to reposition a site in terms of its assets for future industrial development. And this is the type of facility that you commonly see in the brownfields world. It has the benefit of having been cleaned up through a removal action, but offers a good example of an approach to repositioning sites for redevelopment. Thanks.
Thanks very much. We actually have a question on Buckby Mirrors, which is, how does the reuse planning approach at removal sites differ from NPL sites in the remedial pipeline?
So one of the the primary difference between the reuse assessment at a removal site versus an NPL site or a site in the remedial pipeline is that the process in terms of establishing remedy components and requirements for long-term stewardship is a little bit less certain. EPA has the requirement of coming in and doing the emergency removal action, and so clarifying for the prospective purchaser the condition of the property required cross-referencing a lot of documents and developing some materials that reflected important information in terms of, and potential contamination at the site was probably the big difference.
Okay, that's great. We don't have any more questions right at this moment, so why don't I go ahead and make some closing remarks, and then I'll turn it over to Michelle. So I want to thank you, Elisa and Matt, for sharing those case studies. It was great to get an in-depth look at reuse planning in action. And I know that SRI has found that sharing examples of successful projects and lessons learned is one of the most effective tools for promoting reuse. I think it inspires stakeholders with opportunities and vision. It shares tools and resources that help facilitate changes. And it provides hope to communities that are struggling to find a silver lining at a contaminated property. And as Frank Avasato mentioned earlier, we hope that these examples have sparked your interest and helped you to think about how reuse planning might benefit at a site that you're familiar with. I wanted to take a minute to say that SRI has a number of additional resources on our website. You can take a look at additional reuse planning project examples and get more information about the reuse planning process in the community support area of our website. We also have fact sheets highlighting successful reuse, as well as technical reports and in-depth fact sheets. And these resources cover everything from strategies for reuse of sites where waste is left in place and types of alternative energy reuse to economic impact case studies and examples of how to overcome barriers to reuse. Next slide. As I mentioned earlier, SRI works closely with EPA regions, and we're able to facilitate collaboration between the EPA site team and site stakeholders. And close collaboration with the 10 regions allows SRI to identify Superfund sites that can benefit from reuse-related engagement and assistance like our regional seeds. SRI has a redevelopment coordinator in each region to support reuse at the site-specific level. So if you'd like more information about an existing reuse project or would like to discuss exploring reuse opportunities for a site near you, I hope you'll feel free to reach out to your regional coordinator. And I also hope that you'll feel free to contact me or Frank Avasato if you have any questions or you'd like to discuss a specific site. We're happy to discuss our current reuse planning projects, and we can also put you into contact with the appropriate individual in a specific region. So I want to thank you so much for joining our webinar today, and I'm going to turn you over to Michelle Mahoney, who's going to talk to us about our survey.
Yeah, thanks, Melissa, and thank you to all the presenters for an engaging seminar today. I pulled up a survey that I can see people are starting to answer the questions already, which is great. And as Melissa mentioned at the beginning of the webinar today, we actually chose the topic for today's webinar based on your responses at the last webinar. So we wanted to take this opportunity to offer you the chance to let us know what you think, what you'd like to hear more of, what you want us to talk about at our next SRI webinar, which will likely be in early 2014. And then you can see there's a choices where there's a multiple choice response. We also have below that box an area where if you're interested in getting direct emails from us regarding Superfund redevelopment, mainly advertisements for these webinars, you can type in your email address, and I see some people are doing that, so that's great. We'll add you to our list, and we can just keep you aware of activities that we're doing related to this topic. And then if you would like a specific future webinar topic, we have an area in the top right-hand box where you can type in your suggestions. And like I said, we'd love to know what it is you think and what you'd like to hear more of. And then we also included here the related URLs. which you were looking at throughout the entire webinar in the additional resources pod. But we also have that information here. And we also will encourage you, and Jean will talk you through this in the next section, where we will ask you to fill out seminar feedback related to, more generic related to the way we deliver our webinars. And, you know, if you want to provide feedback additional to topics other than Superfund redevelopment, that would be a place for you to go. I see people are still typing in responses, so I guess I'd like to keep this page up for another, you know, minute or less, just to give you all a chance to put your thoughts in, let us know what you're thinking, and everyone should be able to see the results of the vote, at least the multiple choice voting, and it looks like there's a lot of interest in alternative energy, in green infrastructure, ecological revitalization, recreational reuse. So this is really great. I think there's a lot of additional content that we can develop in webinars around those topics. So really appreciate the response, and we're getting a couple written in future webinar topics. So I really appreciate that too. People wanting to know about, you know, how to do a reuse assessment during the pre-ROD phase and other areas like that. So I think this is really, really helpful to us. I really appreciate everyone taking the moment to fill in your answers. It looks like the activity is slowing down a little bit on the survey page. So I think at this point I'm going to go into our closing set of slides. But if you ever think you'd like to share with us, to our Clue in Maine seminar page and get our email addresses and information to get in touch with us, and that's you'll see a link to the main seminar page under the related URLs on this page. One other thing I just wanted to share with everyone, remind you that the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative is a part of a webinar series. We have topics related to redeveloping Superfund sites. We've done 18 of these so far. They've been archived, and here's the web link if you want to get directly to just the Superfund redevelopment webinars. And as I mentioned, it's likely that our next SRI webinar will be in early 2014, possibly later this year, but most likely early next year. And with that, I think I'll turn it over to Jean Ballant, who will help close out our seminar today, and through some news that she would like to bring to our attention.
Okay, great. Thank you so very much, Michelle. I'm just going to remind everybody before I end things today, apologize, there's a little bit of a lag on my end here, on how we provide today's live broadcast, as well as how you can download a copy of the presentation materials and take a look at some of those additional resources that were there. We have not only the PowerPoint presentations that we had from today's session, but also a whole collection of related websites and other resources that are available on something called the Resources or Links page. And that actually is available on the far right side. You'll see a window called the Related URLs. You can actually click on any one of those URLs at any point in time and press the Browse To button and actually open them up locally on your own computer. If you're looking for, again, copies of the presentation materials, you'll find that on the seminar resources page. And the other thing we'll also ask, if you could just take a moment to fill out the short feedback form for today's session and let us know what you thought of today's seminar. Again, that's also found as a related URL. You can click on that, and it should open up a page that will allow you to just take a moment or two and provide some basic thoughts as well as comments on our seminar. We do read each and every one of those submissions, so if you're looking to participate in future free Internet seminars like today's, we would ask that you just share your thoughts with us so we continue to improve and offer these seminars through the Cleanup Information Network. If you had multiple participants join you at your particular location, you can each submit feedback on your own. Once you fill out that form, there will be a link that will appear that will allow another person to hop on and fill out the form for their own results. If you're not able to do that live now or don't have time, or you're actually one of the lucky people replaying the recorded version of today's seminar, that feedback form is actually active from this point forward. So you can actually submit feedback at any point in time, whether you're live or coming back to it next week or several months down the road. The other reminder that I would have is we often get asked about CEUs and other training certificates. We don't necessarily offer those through the CLUIN website. However, many of our participants are able to earn credit for participating in our seminars. If you save your registration email, you download the sort of presentation overview or copies of the slides that were used today from the seminar resources page, and then you fill out feedback, there's a link on the feedback form that you can actually check, it's circled in red here, to request a confirmation email, which will at least verify that you submitted feedback after the live delivery. Make sure your email address is entered correctly on that feedback form so that you can get that confirmation email. And if you couple those items together, you may be able to earn credit from your accrediting institution or training officer for joining us today. Again, if multiple people joined under one registration, you can each fill out your own confirmation feedback form and request your own confirmation email to be sent to you for your own records. Again, today's seminar was recorded and will automatically be archived on the CLUIN website. It usually takes us about 1 to 2 weeks to produce those archives, and you will get an email as soon as that recording is available for free replay or download. I want to thank the dozens of individuals who were able to join us from all over the U.S. for joining on today's live broadcast. Again, I hope this was a valuable expenditure of your time. Thank you all so very much for joining us today. This will be the formal conclusion for today's live broadcast. I hope you have a great rest of your day.